don't need to do too much. So the whole concept of exceptions is built into Java as a language construct, and it has to deal with runtime errors. So any Java method that can cause a runtime error, well, almost any, I'll explain that a little bit later, will have as part of its interface in the declaration of the method something called a throw, which gives the name of the exception that can be caused during that method. Then other methods which may use that either must catch the exception, which is to say what to do in the event of the exception, or it can refuse to handle the exception, and it can itself throw the exception to someone who calls it. So here is the basic structure of exception handling. Oh, excuse me. Next time that happens that I forget to switch monitors, would someone please point it out? I'm sorry. You were wondering where I was, right? Okay, I was going over the first page on exceptions. This is at the end of talk two. So here's the basic structure of exceptions. Notice that down at the bottom is defined a method called method 3, which is could possibly cause a runtime error, like dividing by zero or reading a file, which can cause a runtime error if the file isn't there or if the permissions are wrong for what you're trying to do or something like that. So this method in its declaration will have the keyword throws and will give the name of the exception that it's going to possibly give at runtime. Now, in the middle of the page is an example of a method here called method 2, which can calls a method, method 3, which can cause a runtime error, but it doesn't want to handle the exception, so it itself just passes the exception on through to whoever calls it. At the top here, we have a method which is calling method 2, and which intends to handle this exception. So the call to method 2 is put inside this try statement. The first part, the first block of the try statement is one or more statements which may include calls to methods which may give runtime errors. It could be more than one call. You could have a number. You could have a whole block of code there. You don't have to handle tiny individual exceptions. You could handle a whole block of code that might cause one or more exceptions. Anyway, at the end of the try block, there's the keyword catch, and then inside the parentheses, you give a variable name, in this case E, and then you give the name as a type, you give the name of the exception that you're going to handle. Then there's another block and you have some code which handles the error. Or you can have an empty block if it's an error that you don't care about. And I mean, you can handle it by doing nothing. Now there's a hierarchy of exception names built into Java. The Java classes that are already there can give various types of exceptions. And so everything is a throwable exception. The ones that you have to catch are actually called exceptions. And then under that, here at the level of array exception, there's a whole list of types of exceptions that can occur. And in general, they're grouped together like array exception, so that you don't have to try to catch individual array exceptions, but you can just catch the whole class of them in any method which might cause array exceptions. Here's an example that shows how to catch an I/O exception for doing file I/O. So in this example, in the statement try, there is some calls to various methods doing files. Here's a file created. You say new file, and it creates a handle to the file with name that you want. And then, for example, a method that you can do on that file is the write method. You presumably needed to open the file first, and so there could be any number of statements here. Then you can catch all I/O errors from opening the file, from doing various read and writes, by catching something of type I/O exception. And then you have to put some kind of handling in this block. You might want to print some sort of error message to the user saying, you know, I couldn't find this file, or this file had the wrong permission. And there are other methods to handle that. And then at the end, you can optionally put the keyword finally and have another block which has a set of code which is always to be executed whether or not the code terminates normally. So you can make sure there's something that happens. And in this case, the thing that you might want to make sure happens is that the file gets closed, regardless of whether there was an error. So all the things that I was showing you were a subclass of the class throwable that is called exception, and it's a subclass of exceptions, runtime exceptions, which you don't have to necessarily catch. And examples of these are things like out-of-memory errors. There are some types of errors which could sort of happen anywhere and are so disastrous that they don't make you catch them. So that there are things that, runtime errors that can occur that you don't have to catch in your code. So those were general remarks about exceptions, and they're true whether you're writing a Java application or a Java applet. But the only thing different about Java applets, unlike applications, where if you're writing a method and you might choose to pass the exception on up to somebody, in an applet you can't really choose to do that because you're being called by the browser, and the browser is not prepared to handle exceptions. So you really must handle all the exceptions that could happen. If you really want to bring an error to the attention of the viewer, such as they typed in their URL incorrectly or so on, you can give messages. But if you don't want to go to a lot of programming to present messages on the browser window to the user, in fact, if you have a runtime error, if the applet suddenly quits, the user should look under the Java console, under the options menu, and it will display the runtime errors that occurred. So there are ways of getting this kind of information from the browser window. And I think that's the last page of that talk. Is that right? Oh. It dropped off the end of the world. Well, that was supposed to be the last page. I guess it got lost in the copying process. I'm going to start the third talk, which is in general about graphics and about the abstract windowing toolkit. And I think in this initial part of this class, that's about as far as we're going to get. I may touch briefly on a couple of topics in the fourth section, but not too much. And in fact, we may be able later in the course to come back to some of those issues or handle them as they arise. So actually, in order to tell you more about graphics, you may have noticed, as you recall from last time when I introduced the example about wanting to have a moving object in the browser window, I had to introduce a thread that would say what the computation was that was going to move the object. So I want to give a short introduction to threads here without getting deeply into issues about programming multi-threading. So what is a thread? Well, essentially, you just think of a thread as a sequential flow of control. It's a list of statements that says to do something. And that's sort of a general definition. If a process or what you might think of as a program has more than one thread, then they execute what is known as concurrently. That is, each sequential flow of control is interleaved by the CPU so that each one gets a chance to run. And it appears to you like they're both running at the same time. There's only one CPU that's actually running them, but since it's running each one a little bit in turn, it looks like they're both making progress. So that's why you want to introduce threads, is when you want to have more than one flow of control that's making progress, so that you don't just have one flow of control execute continuously and finish before you get to start the other one. They both get to run, get a chance to run at the same time. So in applets, you do want to do that, because if you're going to have something that's running continuously in the browser window, you want it to have a separate flow of control as the browser. So there'll be two, essentially, flows of control. One will be the browser window, which is doing things like detecting if the user tries to close the window or move a window around in the screen. And your applet flow of control, which is actually doing things in the interesting things in the browser window. Now in Java, when you introduce an extra thread, the main part of the computation is always supposed to be in a method called run. So the way that you have an independent flow of control is that you create something called a thread, and you give it a method called run, which has the computation that you want to do. That's one way to do it. And in general, there are times with applets where you want to, you can create separate classes, which is create threads in that way. But if you want to introduce a thread under the control of the applet, you have this problem that you can't have the applet be a thread itself, because it's already an applet. But it can't be a child of two different parents. So that's why this interface mechanism is introduced. And I'm going to show you how that works. I guess first I'll show you the way the code looks to remind you, and then I want to go to the Java resource page and show you more about how to look up methods with applets. In particular, we'll look up the thread class and see what kind of methods it has. So if you want your applet to have a thread with a flow of control, you add the keyword implements runnable to the header of the applet so that you have the interface for threads. You include an instance variable for the thread so that you create a new thread. And you have a run method, which has the body of the code that you want to run. And you have a start and stop method, which can start and stop the thread from running. And before I go through the code from the example, let's check out a little bit more about the thread class. So here I am. I can go to the Java resources, which is this little coffee cup icon. And in here, we have not only the lectures that I, online versions of these lectures that I'm giving now, but some examples and tutorials, which I'm going to go over more at the end of class, because I want to show you where to find some examples that will be helpful in writing your homework. But we copied down a local copy of the Java, some of the Java documentation. And this is a new version, which actually I don't find quite as helpful as some of the old versions. And we just copied it down because it'll be faster for you to connect than to connect to the original version at Sun. So the packages, so here is a list of all the Java packages, and it describes what classes are in each one. And if you look under java.lang, it says that it has essential Java classes, including a list of number of things, and that list includes threads. So we'll click on this, and here are the list of classes. And sure enough, it includes thread. And here's the list of interfaces. So first, let's check out the interface runnable, which is the one that we're using. And the interface for runnable is very simple. It says that if you're going to implement runnable, you have to have a method called run. That's all that says. There's no body to the method run. This is abstract. It's just a promise to the compiler that if I say that I'm going to implement runnable, I will have there a method called run. And that means that some other packet, some other class, can know that I implement runnable and can call my run method. It's guaranteed that there will be a run method there. So let's look at the thread class. I don't find this formatting of the Java API quite as nice as the old version. Maybe I just haven't found the right version yet since we recopied everything. But anyway, here is the API for the thread class. And it is a subclass of object, and it also implements the interface runnable. It has some fields, some variables having to deal with being able to have a whole group of threads and setting priorities. And I'm not going to get into details of that. I just want to show you some of the things that are here. And there are some number of constructors here. And really, the two main constructors are the first two. And I will tell you what's important about those two constructors. If you create a class, which is a subclass of thread, you use this first constructor to create the thread. If you have a class like an applet, which implements runnable and wants to create a thread, you use this constructor to create the thread. And what this constructor does, you give this constructor the reference to the applet, and this constructor says, create a thread, but its run method will be the run method given by this reference. So you write your applet, it has a run method. When you use this constructor to create the thread, it does it using the run method of the applet. And that's how it all hooks together, having an interface space and being able to create a thread. In this API, there are not a lot of explanations. I will, when I have more time, I'll look around in some of the documentation and see if I can find a slightly better version. There are lots of other methods here having to do with fairly complex things that you might want to do with threads. But in particular, all we want to do is to be able to start and stop the thread. So there are methods. Anybody who creates a thread, the thread is going to execute the run method. And if it has a loop, it could execute it, you know, running on forever. But you can always start and stop it by issuing these commands, these methods on the thread. Let me show you the example. Here's an example which is a very simple animation, and I'm going to ask you to do for your homework an example which is also an animation. So this is an example of a simple form of the kind of thing you want to do. And this one is essentially a digital clock. It's going to have a loop which keeps looking up the date and displaying it. So it'll just continuously display an updated clock face. So we call it digital clock. Of course, it's an applet, so it has to be a subclass of applet. And it's going to implement runnable because it has to have this continuously running thread. Here we declare and create a font that we're going to use to print the results of the time. We have a date, so we have a variable that's declared to be of type date, and we have a variable that's declared to be of type thread. So these are the instance variables of this class. Now here are two methods that the applet wants to include. An applet can always have a start and stop method that it's going to execute whenever the applet is started and stopped. Now, when is an applet started and stopped? Whenever any, it varies a little bit according to the browser, but almost all browsers, if the applet is running in the browser window and someone closes the browser, and even in some browsers, if they take another frame and put it on top, then the applet will actually stop. Then when they reopen the browser window or take another frame off of it, the applet will restart. So in order to save system resources, let me back up a minute. When the applet is started and stopped, the thread that the applet created is still running over here someplace. So what we do is, when the applet is started and stopped, we make it start and stop the thread as well. So when the applet is started, if this tests to see if the runner is already created or not, and in this case, if the runner is not created and the applet starts, we want to create the thread. So here's where we say runner equals new thread, and this is the constructor I showed you where you want to give a reference to this applet so this run method will be used. And the way you give a reference to yourself is there's a special keyword called this. Okay, so I'm using the keyword this as an argument to the thread constructor. So now the thread that's constructed will have a reference to this applet, and it can use it to say this applet.run, and it can run the run method that's over here in the applet. So once we've created the thread, then we use the start method of the thread to make it start. So now the applet is running, and the thread that it created is running. And the applet is running under control of the browser. If for any reason the applet is stopped, in order to save resources, if the runner is defined, that is, if it's not a null pointer, we stop that thread and we set it to be null. So anytime the applet stops, we make the runner stop. So when you write an applet method that's going to have a loop like this with an animation, if you call your thread runner, then you can include this start and stop method just the way it is, and it will all work fine. Or if you change the name of the thread, just change the equivalent thing in here. So here's the main point, which is that there's supposed to be a method called run, which says what to do. And this method has an infinite loop while true. The body of the loop is going to put up the date, and then it's going to wait a while before it goes around and does it again, because otherwise the clock will run so fast nobody can read it. So it creates the current date into this variable, this date variable called the date, by calling the date constructor with no arguments. So that gets the current date, including hours, minutes, and seconds. And in order to show that on the browser window, we call repaint. And repaint calls update, which calls paint. And I'm going to go over those more in a minute. So essentially, this repaint will call this paint method down here. It sets the font to be whatever we want, and it draws a string that has the date in it. Now, almost every class is provided with a standard method called toString, which converts the data represented by that class to a string for viewing. This is a standard thing that people do when they define classes representing dates. So So this variable the date has type date, and we can't print that or do a drawstring on that. But we can convert it to a string by calling the method toString, and then we can call drawstring. And this, as you may recall, is part of the drawstring. It's in the graphics package, and you tell it which pixel location to start drawing the string that you're trying to draw. So back up to our loop. So first we put up the date, and then we want to wait a second in between every time the date is updated. So there's another thread method called sleep, which we can call and tell it to sleep for 1,000 milliseconds. Sleep is a method that has an exception, so we put it inside the try, and then we have a catch. And the thing that can happen, the runtime exception that can happen to sleep, is that you get interrupted execution, and in our case, we don't care. If the thread has interrupted execution while it's trying to sleep, all that will happen is that it sleeps longer than we thought, and that's okay. So we do nothing in this block over here to handle the exception. Yes? This has come up before, and this works, but theoretically this should be runner.sleep, and I should change the size because it makes more sense. I forgot about that. I would have changed the slide. Yes. Well, that really should be runner.sleep. It's the only way it makes sense. I consider it an anomaly that that works. So just consider that a typo and change that word thread where it says thread.sleep to runner.sleep. What page is this? Thank you. Are there any other questions about this example? Okay. Just waiting for the network here. Normally it's pretty good. This is very odd. There we go. Now I want to go over in some more detail about repaint and update and so on. I've mentioned that several times. So we've done applications in which we have an applet which in the browser window wants to change what is drawn there. And whenever you want to redraw the string, you're supposed to call repaint. Now repaint has no arguments, and what repaint does is it gets the graphics contents of the current browser window, and the graphics context tells it what is the current color, what is the current font, and all that stuff. And it creates a thread. It calls update. And the update calls your paint function. So before update calls the paint function, though, the default update has code which